Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Third Degree Burn. I'm Brian Hughes and I am here with several great friends. Over here on my left, I'm pointing right, is Fred West. Hey Fred, how's it going?
Hey everybody, how you doing? I'm sorry I haven't been around for a while, but I'm excited to be back tonight.
Excellent, excellent. We also have Kurt Greenfield.
Good evening.
And from Japan, we got Nigel Spink. Say hi, Nigel.
Hi.
You can say more than that.
Well, that's what you asked me to say. Yes. Good morning.
I'll shut up. And last but not least, Tim Elliott. Hey, Tim, how's it going?
Hello, everybody. It's going good.
Excellent, excellent. We'll also have John Hyatt joining us off and on. As I understand, he's milling about the house doing housework, getting ready for some sort of, you know, postal inspection, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So how's it going? What are we doing tonight?
Alpha Flight.
Alpha Flight. Alpha Flight 17 and 18, if I'm correct.
Right, that is correct.
Yeah. And are we going to talk about X-Men 109 as well, just to...
In passing.
17 and X-Men 109 share a lot of panels, so... Not a bad idea to discuss that. So,
and we've covered 109 in our lead up to Alpha Flight. So, I'll link that with this episode. I'll link that so you can get both sides. Get the old and
maybe new. as a reminder, we can talk about was 109 and this issue out at the same time? Were there a couple years apart?
No. Years apart. Like,
yeah, that's what I thought. I thought they were years apart.
6 years or so apart, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of clarify that, you know, for people that may be wondering about that.
All right, well, before we get in the books, what's going on? I mean, I haven't talked to you guys in a while. I've been pretty busy with a lot of stuff. So what's happening? I haven't,
other than work. I've been just, you know, Halloween came and went. That was nice.
I've rebuilt every piece of electronics in the house here, you know, kind of thing. So my head's been in tech world a little too much lately. So, but that's just me.
My head's in tech world every day.
Yeah. You know what they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Don't update it.
That's right.
That's when it breaks, is when you update it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, for those that don't know, I mean, obviously everybody knows that X-Men Elsewhere is getting published early next year, or we're going to see our first book early next year. It looks like they're still not sure of the release date, even though they had mentioned April. So it could come out later than that. So just be prepared for that. And that's all I have on the brand new John Byrne news front.
Is that, I'm sorry, Brian, am I keeping up with that? Is that coming out, obviously it's not coming out as individual issues. Is it coming out one big massive, like, omnibus? Or are they splitting it up in like part one, part two? Or
it's going to be three books,
That
are going to come out, I think, like several months apart. And each of them is going to have, I like 10 issues plus extra material to get all 32 issues into three books. Basically, it won't be quite as big as the Marvel Universe by John Byrne that came out that you can find sometimes at Ollie's for $10.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, it looks like it's going to be that, and it'll be a hardcover kind of thing. And there will be a signed edition that will get a release. Now, whether or not Byrne is going to be anywhere to sign any copies beyond those ones that they're going to specially do remains to be seen. I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up at the comic book shop over there in Connecticut. So anybody over there, just, you know, gas up your Jeep and get ready to go.
Yeah, it's only 10 hours away.
And he might do some kind of a con, maybe. I don't know. You know, he looked kind of like he did with the Star Trek stuff he did with Shatner. You know, they promoted that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's because William Shatner asked him to do it. I mean, otherwise he would have no interest in doing that at all. He really doesn't like doing the con. You know?
Well, that's why I was that first time I met him when he was doing a Boston con. It was just so unusual. That's why he flew up there to see him, because he doesn't do cons.
But I got to say, even though he doesn't necessarily care to do them, he was very nice to me when he was there.
He's very generous with his time. And he,
and he was
for
helpful,
free.
Too. He made sure that you understood how to get the most bang for your buck and all that. So yeah. I was pleased. And he actually knew my name, too. So I would, that was a surprise, too.
Speaking of, this is adjacent to Shatner. I know a couple of weeks ago they had said he went to the hospital. Does anybody know anything about that? Is he okay out? Is he?
Yeah, I think that was a very quick thing.
Something okay, minor okay.
Yeah, and just people made more of it than it, you know, should have been. But now he's still out and about, running about. In fact, he's got some Star Trek related news that's supposed to come up here soon. But I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm looking to see if I can grab that real quick.
Well, I know he's been doing a lot of, you know, the set tour that's up in Ticonderoga in New York, where they have you can take tours of the sets they use for the fan films they did. And he's up there all the time. There's like a Shatter Day or something they do where he shows up and you can kind of mingle with him while he's on the set and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, I think I know what this is, what they've been talking. Because he's been in talks with them about being involved in the upcoming series. And what I think they could be was if you've been watching Strange New Worlds, you know they've given Paul Wesley a lot to do. Paul Wesley is the guy that plays James Kirk on that series, and he keeps popping in and finding different reasons to be on the show. And I think that they want to, you know, once Strange New Worlds ends after next year, they just want to go ahead and bring in Shatner, Wesley, and maybe do like a Enterprise Year One, and have Shatner, kind of narrate or bookend the episodes.
I'd heard they were going to possibly do. Basically, redo Star Trek, the original series.
Yeah, Chris is here. He wants to say hi. He won't be able to hear you, though.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah. Why are you shirtless?
Shirt hurts my nipples.
Okay, it hurts his nipples. Anyway. But, yeah, that's what it sounds like it would be. It's
interesting.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Well, that, you know, they on if you watch season 3 of Picard, when they're on the, where were they? They were in the
the museum.
Yeah, was it the museum or some secret Federation archive something? And that you saw?
Yeah, it was a Federation archive.
Oh yeah.
It was Shatner's body or something they showed in stasis or something. So, you know that. You know, something they could possibly do with maybe they bring him back the way he did in his own book, The Return, or maybe he has something to do with Starfleet Academy. That's the show that's coming out next January. Yeah, possibly. Yep. You know, as a he voices something, and maybe they're gonna CGI him.
Yeah.
So
he was on the Genesis planet, so he was irradiated.
Well, any of them could have been. Yeah,
I'd be nervous of them turning him into the clone of Kalis that they did for the Klingons.
Oh, that was bad. No, hey, Chris did want me to ask you guys if any of you have seen the new Benicio del Toro, I'm sorry, Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein.
I have. No. Yeah, we took the theater and saw it.
Yeah, what did you think?
I liked it. I'm not as high on it as probably other people are, but I thought it was pretty good.
I had some people talking it up to me yesterday, said it was fantastic.
We really enjoyed it. It wasn't as much Del Toro as his other movies, you know, as far as the production design and everything.
Yeah.
But it was really good.
I was wondering if you guys wanted to do like a review on it like we did on Superman and Fantastic Four.
talk about the movie.
Or cocktails and comics, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do it on that. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll pick that up later.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, so what were we talking about today, Brian? Or did you guys have anything else to discuss before we got into the book?
No, I think we can jump in. We've got our two heavy hitters today are Kirk and Nigel, who have taken the chore on doing the synopsis for 17 and 18. I think, Kirk, you're up first.
All right. I'm going to need some help from Brian when we get to the to some burn data here, but I'm ready to go. Alpha Flight number 17, Dreams Die Hard by John Byrne, creator slash chronicler, Andy Yenkus, colorist, I hope I'm saying that right, Joe Rosen, letterer, Denny O'Neill, editor, Jim Shooter, editor-in-chief. And additional materials, pages 8 through 16, with some dispute as to whether there's a gap in there, Chris Claremont and Terry Austin. We'll discuss why they're credited in just a few moments. The 60-cent cover price went on sale August 14th, 1984. It's the December 1984 issue. It's mainly green, but it is a recreation of the cover to X-Men number 109, which is the first appearance of Guardian slash Vindicator in the series, which we've covered in another show. As this title has moved forward on the printing schedule by 2 weeks, there's about half of this book that's reprint worked into the framing device to tell the tale in discussion with Heather. Now, Brian, can you share what other additional works John Byrne may have been working on at this time?
Yeah, for December of 1984, we had, aside from Alpha Flight 17, we had Epic Illustrated number 27. So that had a chapter of the Last Galactus story. Fantastic Four 273, Fathers and Others. I believe that was the conclusion of the Nathaniel Richards story that gave us that nice little tidbit at the very end, leaning towards Kang, Rama Tutnamortis. And then Power Man and Iron Fist number 112, Bad Ned. That was just the cover that they did. And then there was an X-Men reprint of issue 122. That was a German reprint, Marvel Klubben. And that's what you got. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, the original cover is by Dave Cockrum. This version by Byrne slightly repositions the characters, Banshee, Oro, Logan, and Colossus. Now, I'm going to move through this fairly quickly, so we'll come back and discuss this if I got something wrong or you want something underscored or to discuss the details. The splash page shows Mac trying on his new battle suit, as Heather reminisces. In the flashback, the discussion of how much more battle experience the FF Cap and the Avengers have is interrupted by Gary Cody announcing that Weapon X has gone rogue. Heather and Logan talk about how Logan's defection to the X-Men hurt him and put him at odds with Department H and the Canadian government, as Mac, Gary, and the government then plan for a covert invasion of the U.S. to get him back. Meantime, in flashback, Logan recaps the first major adventures of the new X-Men, leading up to their return from the Shari world. The X-Men were preparing for some R&R in the woods or a preserve when Oro and Logan have a misunderstanding over his practicing his stalking skills instead of actually hunting wildlife. The second half of that page shows Mac being deployed as Weapon Alpha, dropping out of a stealth carrier and preparing to pop up out of the ground, startling Logan. The rest of the fight and the battle is pretty much lifted right out of X-Men 109. Now, when he escapes the battle with a pop, we follow his thoughts as he recovers and worries over how Moria may have been injured as a bystander. We cut back to the present, where Heather blames herself for Mac's death as he was disconnecting his battery pack to protect anyone nearby, and Logan confirms this was one of Mac's weaknesses, being overly concerned for the other guy. He also recognizes Heather's survivor's guilt, and he begins to support her. An off-camera voice walks in and surprises him, however, saying he didn't think he'd find such comfort and compassion in Logan. Well, it's Judd, and it's obvious that he and Logan have respect for each other's abilities. They crossed paths in Maracaibo. I hope I'm saying that right. Although they never formally met, they agree to talk over old times at greater lengths, but turn their attention to Heather. She says that they've been talking over Alpha Flight and giving them quote unquote last rites. But Judd corrects her, saying the dream shouldn't die. He knows of only one person who was there right from the start who could hold the team together. And Logan begins to object, saying he can't come back right now. But Judd says it wasn't him that he was thinking of. It's Heather, who reacts at first shocked until Judd convinces her that she was the glue that held the team together. She agrees to lead Alpha Flight. Cut to a clear aqua tank where a nude Aurora is floating, waiting for Walter to start the process of converting her energies to be different or independent from her twin, who is not present. She screams as the process starts, breaking out of the tube. Walter rushes to her side, but she says the brief pain was worth it if it worked. As she dresses off camera, Walter muses that he's changed her mutant signature so she won't read as a mutant anymore. But at that moment, she enters in a new white and yellow outfit that we don't completely see. We're not sure what Walter is shocked by as the issue comes to an end. And that's my summary.
Nicely done.
Yep. Very well done.
Now, I kept looking in this issue for a reference to the brass bishop, because I believe at some point Puck and Logan make reference to that they were both involved in the affair of the brass bishop, but I couldn't find it, so I'm not sure where I'm remembering that from.
I think that's X-Men Classic, and that was Banshee and Logan, but was I could be mistaken.
Okay, well, I couldn't find it, and so I won't even mention it.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to go look for that one later.
Now, my understanding is at the end of last issue, 16, there was an announcement saying, hey, folks, watch for Alpha Flight to move forward 2 weeks on the printing schedule. And the only way that I can figure out that they did this, one, they could see it coming and that Byrne must have planned to do half of this issue as basically a reprint of 109, tailoring it so that it fit, because there's an awful lot of exposition in this book and very little action. There's no fight sequence that he originates, although he again bookends the fight from 109 with a little bit of action. So I, looking at it now, I didn't catch it at the time that it was a so much of a reprint of 109, but now I think I see the machinations, the machinery here of how they were moving it up 2 weeks in the run by getting this ready, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it works. It was nice to revisit the old adventure and to see it from Heather and Logan's point of view, filling in some of the blanks for Mac.
Well, it explains that pop, because if you've read 109 and it disappears, you don't know until this point, I don't think. This is when he explains how he was able to disappear so quickly by negating his
inertia,
you know, to the earth, so that he just instantly disappeared.
Yeah, well, considering how fast the world turns, and that there are 24 time zones around the world, for a person to immediately counteract tracking with the world as it spins might plow you right through a mountain range. You know, it's an interesting concept, but
or hit a plane, you know, you're gonna,
yeah.
Hopefully his suit must have some type of guidance that keeps him from hitting something, I would assume.
I'll grant you your no prize theory. That works for me.
Otherwise, just hitting a bird would kill him.
Now, what did you guys think about the differences in his cover to the X-Men 109 cover? But looking at it, you know, I mean, he did some positional changes, and then he also changed the dynamic of how his fist hit Logan.
I think it was good, because I think it was enough of a change so that you didn't think, oh my goodness, you know, it's the same, they're just doing the same cover. And it also made the fanboys run back and get their copy of 109 and go, how, what's different, you know, kind of thing. And if you didn't have a copy of 109, you immediately went to the bins to find and buy one, you know, kind of thing. So it kind of doubled the sales if you were only tracking Alpha Flight at this time.
Yeah. Well, at least they couldn't sit there and say he just traced it.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I think his is a little more dynamic.
Yeah.
But I'm a sucker for mm-hmm. Cochran, so... I like Cochran's because, you know, Vindicator is much beefier than Cochran's view. He's much more muscular.
I mm-hmm. still can't think of him as Vindicator. I always think either Weapon Alpha or Guardian. You know?
He's Weapon Alpha here, right? Yeah.
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 I can't keep the names straight, to tell you the truth. I know that there was some explanation of how and when and why they changed the name, but I can't keep it straight.
Well, that was just Claremont that he liked it. In fact, it's in this when he does his little pop, and he's sitting there thinking to himself that he says he's got something an awful lot to vindicate, mm-hmm. and thereby feeding him the idea of changing his name to Vindicator.
Oh, it's like Tony Stark saying, you know, they will. That's how they get the name Avengers. Well, at least the original one, that they will avenge it.
Yeah. So that was a Claremont thing.
Well, I think that's a natural. If you're a superhero, I think you would naturally might have different names. You're going to start out with something, you know, and find something else that works, and you know, it's going to evolve. You're not going to just stick with one name. But it's kind of like Kitty Pryde. How many names has she had?
Ariel's right.
Or like the Wasp, how many Shadow costumes has she had?
Yeah, that's natural too.
I don't think Vindicator didn't last too long, did it? I think that's why I tend to not think about him as Vindicator much. Because he was Weapon X. Weapon Alpha. And then he was Guardian in no time. Vindicator only seemed to last a short while.
Yeah.
But they use the terms throughout the whole run of Alpha Flight back and forth, which is really confusing. And they keep resurfacing it and then putting it back in a really weird way, even beyond the burn years. It continues to crop up in different points in the story. You know, kind of thing where there's Guardian and Vindicator and, you know, who's got the title at any given time. It's like watching a baton and a relay race go back and forth to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well,
I should share for those. You were just talking about fanboys going back and buying a copy of 109 in the back issue bins. Then, you know, in terms of doing that, that's a nice way to give comic book shops some back business, mm-hmm. but it doesn't improve Marvel's stand. It doesn't put any change in the pockets of either Marvel or Byrne. It's only the local comic book shops. I'm mm-hmm. fortunate enough to have this issue reprinted in the Alpha Flight Classics trade paperbacks, volume 2, where they reprint both issues. They do Alpha Flight in order, and then as they get to the end of this, they reprint X-Men 109. So I'm literally able to flip not just one page, but a number of pages and go between the Alpha Flight cover on the left and then the X-Men 109 cover on the right. So I'm doing just what you described, Fred, as far as the fanboy comparing. Now, what did they change and what's different?
Yeah,
I've actually got a digital copy I bought on Amazon, a Kindle version of that same trade paperback that Kirk's talking about. And I tell you, you know, the way I look at this, it really looks like the printing quality of the Alpha Flight books back in the day was really bad, because it really made Byrne's work look really, really thick. And it doesn't look so thick in the trade.
Mm.
It's you know, the ones that's the original art, And we only get that, of course, for 17 because 18's got Andy, Bob Wiacek picking up the inks.
Does anybody own 109 as a floppy?
You know, I was just looking in my collection.
Sorry, what? Yeah.
You have? I don't have. I have the issues on either side of it.
Yeah, I've got issue 109, but I just couldn't be. I was just thinking I didn't get it out. I'm just going into the Marvel database now to have a look at the difference between the two pictures. Ah, yeah. I was going to say, looking at the cover to the Alpha Flight 17, I prefer the foreground figures on Burns' issue to X-Men 109. But I prefer the background figures of the of 109 to this
like the
one.
Water, I like the water in Cochran's better.
Yeah,
than Burns.
Yeah, the splashy. But
I like the blast on Colossus. The Burns blast on Colossus Burns rather blast. Than Cochran's.
Yeah, it looks a bit more spectacular. But I like. I don't know. It's the I see what you mean now, Tim, about Weapon Alpha being more beefy.
He is big, he's
when
big.
I look at the when I look at the two.
Well, on page 9, that second half of that page with Guardian coming out of the ground, isn't that mainly the 109 image?
Yeah, that is
kind of thing.
That whole
I mean, that's the one that. I don't have an issue of 109 in front of me, but that's the image I remember from seeing a 109. And you're right, Mac does look beefier in that image.
Well, I think Burns started. We certainly saw that with FF, where he started later in his run. He started to make his characters a little leaner, especially Reed and Johnny. They weren't Kirby buff the way he drew them when he first started.
Once he started at 232, he made Reed a scientist. And so, he was going to be leaner, a lot
leaner
thinner.
Like it, yeah.
And you look even at his costume, and his costume didn't fit. It had folds.
It's all baggy.
Where the tunic goes into the pants. And Johnny also stopped being, the hulking Human Torch and started becoming more of a guy that just, got into regular exercise instead of extensive exercise.
As Ohama would say, what they call it, intensive regular exercise or just regular exercise.
Yeah. Or Olympic level exercise like Captain America.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And on Tony Stark, it says, Tony gets a workout with the Iron Man armor itself.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was funny.
What did you guys think of on this one, especially after we get out of the reprint pages, which is page 15, we go to 16. The way that you can see how the art works, the art style changes, and then once you flip over, it really changes. 17, 18, it looks a little less. It looks more like it was inked with a pen instead of a brush. So the lines are a little. They're not quite as.
They are thicker.
They're thicker. They're not quite as yet. You can't
beat precise.
Austin. You can't beat Austin for his clean, precise, thin lines. And I'm especially looking at on page 18, Puck's head. When it looks a little misshapen.
Logan's.
Logan doesn't. Like
he doesn't look like
space.
Wolverine.
Yeah.
Fact is, it's like Superman's face inside of the Wolverine hair. But the funniest thing to me in this whole book is where Heather's making the proclamation at the bottom of page 19?
Yes.
And all I hear is Dean Wormer saying, "I will be that foot." So from Animal House, I don't know if you guys didn't get that, but that's "I will be that leader."
Or Bill Murray, "I will be the big toe."
No, Sergeant Hulk is the big toe.
Yeah, but he's not always going to be here to be that big toe.
Yeah.
I kind of like Aurora's line on Page 12, where she's complaining about having to wear a bikini.
Yeah. And
silly scraps of clothing. And then Logan's like, hey, remember what happened the last time you tried to swim in the mansion pool? I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, it was Colossus who said that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It was Colossus. Yeah.
And she never understands us and all of our prudish worries. And yet she's just wearing strips of string. But if she wore underwear, then she'd be covering up.
I don't know about you guys, but as I was reading 17 here, I got a real sense of foreboding in two of the cliffhanger ends. At the bottom of page 19, when the other says, I will be that leader, the fact that it cut off at that point, I was worried. I was like, oh, because I didn't know what that meant, where it was leading. And then the next three pages with Aurora and mucking around with her DNA or her signature, and then cutting it off as he goes, holy cow, as she's standing slightly off panel. And we don't know what he's reacting to. That was a double barrel. I was like kind of holding my breath in terms of both of those scenarios because I didn't know where they were going yet. Yeah. But I was like, oh boy, you know, to quote Quantum Leap, oh boy.
Yeah. Sam Beckett.
Well, maybe I've forgotten, but I don't remember in the issues leading up to this, was it Aurora's idea for Walter to kind of monkey with her DNA to change her, or was it his idea to, you know, he obviously is trying to do it to keep her from being persecuted, or, you know.
No, she was really pissed off at her brother.
Right.
And she wanted to differentiate herself
from him,
from North Star. And so Walter was like, well, I think I can do something about this, you know, kind of thing. And here we're seeing it, kind of thing. So I think it was more of her wanting to differentiate her abilities and not be seen as the twins or the team with North Star. Because she was fed up with his antics.
Well, I could see that. Go ahead, Nigel.
Sorry, I was going to say, and don't forget that she was also attempting to try and bury the Jean Marie personality for good. And perhaps she thought doing this change in her makeup would stop that as well, she could be just Aurora.
I could see if she wanted to maybe alter her power set, so she would differentiate herself from North Star, but obviously Lankowski's idea is that, you know, he's talking about the hatred for mutants is, you know, getting worse.
She won't read as a mutant anymore,
right? So she won't pick up, like, in other words, a sentinel would not react to her.
I wondered if that's where this was reading, that they were going to have a clash with the sentinel in the not too distant future. And that this was going to be the ace in the hole, that she was not going to be perceived by them, and as a result, would have an edge, be able to turn the tables on somebody. Mm-hmm. That's all fiction. None of that happened, of course.
Well, was it ever established up to this point
elsewhere
that the twins were actual mutants? Were they ever called mutants up to this
point? Well, the problem is that soon after Byrne left the book, when Bill Mantlo was writing it, he got pressure from the upper guys to find a way of, like, erasing the even the hints at North Star's sexuality. And so instead of, because Mantlo started getting him sick, and they wound up saying that he was part fairy,
but that would have made her part fairy,
right? Exactly.
And that's right. That they had that explanation. I remember that. You know, because there was that whole Asgardian thing with the door with the fairies on it that they went into at some point in the future. So yeah, I remember that. And North Star's sickness was supposed to be like early, like keep in mind, we're talking 80s, 90s, and the AIDS crisis was in heavy rotation. And that's kind of what that was trying to say without actually ever saying it.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
So that's what Mantlo was doing, Brian? And then they told him to back off on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they made him make him a parrot, which
and that's ironic. Better?
There's a joke in that, which we won't talk about, but
which
is odd because they embrace it later and they make him come out and say that he's gay, you know?
Well, I mean, they were, the thing is, like, in the 80s, they were strictly forbidden for being overt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Byrne was able to get in his subtle, things here and there. Yeah, that, you know, but anything, you know, more overt than that, and they were just like, uh-uh.
Well, I'm surprised they allow Aurora's underboob and that shot of her in the tank. That's a little, I mean, for the time, that's a little revealing for a comic code comic.
Well,
it had been done in a lot of books just by the way the costumes are designed. If you ever watch Shadowlass in Legion of Superheroes, there was always what looked like side boob or implied side boob.
Well, that was
implied is the key word. It's implied. Yeah.
But her costume was basically the same color as her skin.
Well, that was the rule with
part of it.
William Theis for the costume designer for the original Trek, that he said the censors would not allow. You could show a lot of cleavage, you could never show any underboob. Couldn't show anything under there at all. So anything they did had to be revealing from the top.
Yeah,
that's.
Well, remember Barbara Eden had to cover her navel in I Dream of Jeannie.
Yep.
I mean, how stupid.
And in Star Trek.
Yeah, but then Marriott Hartley got to have two navels in
Genesis 2.
Genesis 2, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and Roddenberry did that just basically to thumb his nose at the network censors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was the 60s, so this is a little.
So,
well, it didn't fly either. I mean, the series was not picked up, so.
No.
Yeah. You guys are more Byrne experts than I am, so I kind of. In hindsight, I'm looking back at this thing of Heather saying, okay, I will be the leader. Do you think this was Byrne's long-term plan to make her this leader? Like, I knew he had the idea of, you know, killing Mac and doing that stuff, but was it a long-term plan that she be the leader, or did it just like, okay, we killed Mac, we have to keep the title going, okay, who needs to step up, you know, kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I'll give you a kind of a Byrne's eye view of it based on the things that he's said over the years. And that, you know, the fact of the matter is when he was writing Fantastic Four and he was writing Alpha Flight, he didn't have long notes of what was going to happen in the future. He just took it the direction he felt like taking, just like X-Men Elsewhere. He just took it the direction he felt like taking it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, with Elsewhen, that kind of boxed him in some corners and he had to undo things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like when he was doing Alpha Flight, now he never, ever had any plans to put Heather in a costume.
Mm.
Never planned to put her in costume, give her a super suit, anything like that.
She's going to be more of a Professor X, kind of staying at the headquarters, directing things, that type of leader, not going into
the guy in the chair.
Yeah.
The guy in the chair, yeah. And so, you know, that was how it went. The only other note that I really have that I wanted to say was, you see, wait, is that this one or is it the next one? No, it's the next one. So I'm going to skip that.
We'll save that for later.
Yeah, yeah. But, let's see, the last other thing. Oh, yeah, we were talking. Oh, no, that's next also. I'm sorry. My notes are all over the place. I haven't done this in a while. So
foreshadowing is great, Brian.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well,
Fred, to answer your question.
Yeah.
I don't mean to contradict what Brian has just been saying, but it's my belief that Byrne had this all in mind, if not plotted out, that okay. Heather was going to fill in the shoes as the team leader. Not that she was going to wear a costume, but that he always had this in mind from day one, because as soon as he plans for Mac to be killed off, that puts in the machinations for the rest of the story. And it also requires her to have some role for her to stay in the book. So I believe he always intended her to still be in the book and to fill that role so that she can play the role that Courtney Delphine needs her to play later on in the series. So my reaction to your question is, yeah, he had this in mind. He had this planned out up to 28, and then all bets are off as we continually find out.
Excellent.
Didn't mean to stop the show there. Sorry.
Yeah, you killed it.
Are there any more comments on 17, or are we done?
I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we're good on 17. The next one?
Okay, shall we move on? Right, so let's have a look then at Alpha Flight number 18. 18, which has a cover date of January 1985, with the release date October the 2nd, 1984. 32 pages, 22 pages of story for a cost of 60 cents US or 30 pence in Britain or 75 cents in Canada. And the team, as usual, or nearly all as usual, for this issue was writer-penciler John Byrne, inker Bob Wiercik, colours by Andy Yankus, letterer Rick Parker, editor Denny O'Neill, and of course, editor-in-chief Jim Shooter. Other works by Byrne for cover dates January 1985. I've got Power Man and Iron Fist 113. He did the cover on that one. The Thing, number 19. He was the writer on The Thing. And the episode was Monster Mash Part 1. He also did Fantastic Four 274. Of course, writer, artist on that. And that was Monster Mash Part 2. If you remember that, it was the one where they went to have a look at what Ben was doing on Battleworld. And it carried on from the previous The Thing 19. And then I've also got, I don't know whether anybody has the answer to this, it also mentioned Quest Probe number 2.
Yeah, I actually looked
But I don't know why, because I could not find any link to John Byrne at all.
I did look that one up, and what he said was, and I'm quoting him here, "I had almost nothing to do with this, really. One lunch meeting with Scott Adams, that was the programmer of the game. Shooter and a few others, and I provided a design for one character, a design that was subsequently altered by Shooter." And if you want to see what that design was, it was in Ohabu for the, that Quest Probe character that kind of looked like Mysterio.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, that's it then. That's got to be the link. Yeah. Because I thought, well, yeah, he didn't draw anything. He didn't write anything. He's not mentioned anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, did you mention the G.I. Joe cover?
No.
Yeah, G.I. Joe 20, he did the cover.
Sorry,
on that.
Oh, he did the cover. Okay.
Yeah.
I missed that one. And there was also one or two issues reproduced in German, but I didn't bother with that.
Well, there was a Finnish Spider-Man reprint.
Right. Yeah.
And then the Marvel Clubbin, which is a follow up on that, was the first arcade story in X-Men.
Right. So, yeah, just looking at the cover to this one, it's one of those nice tri-split covers that we get from time to time, which gives us a little insight into three of the different main plots going on in the issue that you're about to read. on this particular one. We've got on the left-hand side of the cover, we've got Heather looking in the mirror and holding up in front of her a Guardian costume, which immediately is going to make us think, oh, she's going to be Guardian. She's going to take over the role completely. So it's like, ooh, great. And then on the upper left, on the upper right of that, just underneath the Alpha Flight title, it says A Decision for Snowbird. And we've got Douglas and Snowbird in a romantic position there, just looking into each other's eyes. And then it says Shaman meets the ultimate menace, who on the cover anyway is just a black shadow that made me think, is that his sister? Sorry, his daughter.
Yeah.
Because that's what it looks like in silhouette. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's Elizabeth, two young men. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's a lot that's not revealed by the cover. So it's a good, effective cover and a different style to the usual, like, spectacular pictures that we get.
Is it me, or is the guy trying to kiss Snowbird look like John Saxon?
I see it.
Yeah. Okay.
And for somebody that's going in for a kiss, he looks very angry about it.
Yeah, he didn't look too happy about.
He looks really annoyed. You know,
well, it's just because that turtleneck is like stifling him. You know.
Yeah.
No, she just said
it. Really looks like he's just stabbed her instead of trying to kiss her.
Yeah.
Look at her.
Oh yeah, that last episode of Game of Thrones. It's right there. Oh.
And she's saying, "Please, no tongue."
Yeah.
Okay, so let's have a look at the episode. Moving swiftly on.
Yeah.
So the title of this particular issue is How Long Will a Man Lie in the Earth Ere He Rot? Which has to be the winner of the world's longest title since For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky.
I was thinking that. Holy cow.
Apparently it's a quote from Hamlet.
Right. Okay, so here we go. Hook walks in on Heather to find her looking at herself in the mirror whilst holding a spare Guardian costume to her body. Hook seems worried, but Heather quickly assures him that she is not thinking of becoming a superhero, despite her acceptance of being Alpha's new leader. She wants to try and bring the team's numbers closer together and starts by calling North Star, but he refuses the offer and hangs up. Next, they call the Sarsee Reserve Hospital just outside Calgary, but Shaman, Dr. Two Young Men, is not available. That's because he is out with his daughter at the Fort Calgary Restoration Site, where she discovered a skull infused with spiritual energies. However, Shaman cannot investigate much further, but he's sure something supernatural was unleashed when the skull was uncovered. Later, whilst at Calgary Police Headquarters, Shaman receives a call from Lucas Stang's great-granddaughter, who claims her scrambled eggs attacked her. Shaman and his daughter teleport to the Stang household to investigate. Meanwhile, in the Northwest Territories, Douglas Thompson waits for Snowbird to arrive. She appears, and they again speak of Douglas's love for her. Snowbird does admit she loves him too, but then she reveals her true demonic face to Douglas. Back in Calgary, Shaman and his daughter Elizabeth reach the Stang household and are welcomed in by Emily Stang. Shaman feels the spirit energies and heads to the kitchen, where he confronts the scrambled egg monster. Having cast a spell, Shaman disperses the ectoplasmic matter, and everything returns to normal in the house. Shaman feels this was only a diversion, and they run upstairs to find Lucas Stang being attacked by evil forces. His great-granddaughter is then possessed by the demon Ranak, who attacks Elizabeth too young then. However, despite feeling pain from the attack, Elizabeth's latent powers manifest, and she is able to repel Ranak's power. Shaman takes the opportunity to dispel Ranak with baubles from his pouch, and everything blinks out of existence. Then Shaman and his daughter find themselves in the shattered remains of the house. Stang and his granddaughter Emily are both unconscious, but are still alive. Shaman explains that the answer to all this still lies in the unearthed skull Elizabeth found, and that they must now travel 100 years into the past. To be continued.
Good job.
Yeah.
That skull, was that? That's not the same skull from Alpha Flight 1, though.
No.
Definitely.
Five.
It was a skull when they introduced Elizabeth. That's the first thing she finds is the skull and has a vision.
Was it 15 or 16 where she found the skull?
Yeah.
I did have the impression, though, as we're going to find out, it's got a metal band around the head. And I thought, as I remember, I haven't read ahead now, but as I remember, I thought that was the same as the one back in issue one that unleashed Tundra. And so, so to speak, as a returning opponent, this guy, even though he's dead, even though he slept with a goddess, even though he begat Snowbird, so to speak, he's continuing to unleash things from the mystic side of the world that will continue to plague Alpha Flight for, another 10 issues. At least that was my impression, that guy is continuing, even in death. The skull is still unleashing stuff. That was my take. I may be wrong.
Well, Canada is probably littered with buried mystic skulls.
Yeah. Now
it's the kingdom of the crystal skulls.
So Heather's shirt. Had y'all ever? I looked that up this week, but had y'all looked that up before?
Somebody's mentioned what it says.
It's just a town in Alberta, I think.
Yeah, it says where the heck is High River, and it refers to High River, Alberta, a town south of Calgary. The T-shirt was designed to raise funds similar to Come Hell or High Water campaign, and can be found on sale on sites like Redbubble, so you can still buy them today. So I thought that was interesting.
But how many of you thought that she was going to take up the mantle of Guardian when you saw the first?
I'm surprised she still had a closet full of Guardian costumes.
Well, just the one. She did explain that she'd rolled it up into and hidden it in a sock to get it into America.
Not a fan of Puck's Loki stalking her in the mirror on the first page. Like, that kind of always bothered me about Puck's character, that his most common trait, the trait that he carries is his, like, Loki stalking Heather. It was like, ooh, it's kind of just creepy in hindsight now.
I didn't feel that at all. In fact, when I saw Burn at a Mid-Ohio Con and he had the original art, as it turns out, I thought it was a page from these issues. It turns out when Judd is training in gymnastics, Talisman, I almost bought it thinking that it was Heather that he was training, because I like that relationship. I thought that was going to go places.
Oh, good. Okay.
I didn't find it creepy at all, but I understand.
I don't find it creepy. I just find it very reminiscent of Logan and Jean Grey. It's basically the same, the unrequited love. He's in love with her, she doesn't know it, that kind of thing.
And her husband just died, so maybe give her some space.
Yes. I felt that was true.
I think he's being a little overprotective. I don't necessarily see him as moving in, but he's just very overprotective of her. So that's why he's constantly trying, you know, he's bringing her McDonald's, which, hey, you know, you're superheroes. You shouldn't be eating all those carbs. But
well, it's Canadian McDonald's. It tastes worse.
Well, hey, the first poutine I ever had was at a McDonald's. It was pretty good poutine.
Yeah. And North Star's boyfriend, it didn't take him long to move in.
Well, who's the other friend? I mean, that's a woman.
Well, yeah, there is somebody. There is a woman on a sunbathing.
Yeah.
Well, okay, North Star,
it's his sister.
North Star
it's the boyfriend's sister.
North Star and Aurora weren't living together, were they? They weren't. He always had his own flat, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the guy obviously now. Okay, I guess it is French. I mean, he was speaking French at the beginning, so it's translated from French.
Yes.
But then when he talks to John Paul, who would speak French, he speaks English. Jean Paul, telephone, it's Heather Hudson. You know.
Well, I'm sure he switches to English to talk to Heather, unless she's speaking.
No, he's talking to her in French. It says at the bottom of the third panel there, translated from French.
Well, he answered the phone, assuming it's a French speaker on the phone.
Yeah.
And then he realized it was Heather, and he probably just naturally switched over to English because Heather said who she was. Like, there was a bit of conversation between him picking up the phone and him calling out to Jean-Paul, and so more than likely that was in English, and so he just continued in English. And I have an answer for who the girl is.
Oh yeah? Who's the girl?
Because they couldn't say that they were a gay couple, they had to put a woman in there to assume, so that we would all not assume that the two men were together.
So she's a beard.
She's a beard, exactly.
Okay, okay. Well, to add more confusion to what you were just saying before about the French and English, is that when he gets on the phone, she's like, "I hope you'll forgive my high school French."
No,
so she's still talking to him in French.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's just this guy here that speaks English to Jean Paul, but not to Heather. It's just weird.
But we never established that when they were together as Alpha Flight, they were speaking to the twins in French. They were always conversing in English.
They would always have them say the French word while they were also speaking in English.
All right.
Especially Jeanne Marie. Yeah.
Well, what are you then? I'm French. Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, you silly king?
What do you guys think about the difference? Because I was just looking between the two of this issue, which is Wycheck is inking, and the previous, which I think Byrne inked himself, other than the pages that they took from 109.
Yeah.
And this is a little crisper and a little more detailed
than
ones that I prefer the Wycheck inks. Yeah.
Not Eric Terry Austin, but it's
But I will say this: when I was in my young 20s, I was getting more comfortable trying a lot of different foods because I was a very, very picky eater as a kid, and I'd had a bad incident with eggs when I was a real young boy, so I didn't eat eggs.
What, did they attack you? Why did they scare me?
Well, they attacked my stomach, and then they left my stomach and came back out, you know? This issue right here was right around the time that I was sitting there trying a whole lot of things, and because of this issue, I swore I'd never eat eggs or scrambled eggs because it so grossed me out.
Yeah.
Oh.
The absurdities of the villains in comic books.
The scrambled egg monster.
Scrambled eggs.
Yeah. I kept thinking, we're going to get Howard the Duke at any minute here. Because that's the kind of thing you got in Howard's story.
Yeah. I wondered if it was going somewhere. Like that.
I thought the reference to scrambled eggs, that this was going to pay off somehow, that there was a significance to it, even though I guess it doesn't.
Well, back at that time, Ghostbusters had just come out, so it kind of made me think of Ghostbusters a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it feels a little Stephen King-ish, because King was good at taking the ordinary and making it horrific. So, and it is just, you know, it's absurd. It's almost, or even more than Ghostbusters, more Poltergeist. With her back turned and it's bubbling up in the pan.
Right.
Which, you know, you're scrambling eggs like that. You can't turn your back. It's going to burn if you don't quit. I don't know what she's doing. She's pouring milk or something. I don't know what she's doing.
Yeah, and besides in Ghostbusters, the eggs went sunny side up.
So that's true.
She's measuring something.
Yeah, I don't know. She's making something, but
she got the baking soda, or the baking soda out of the cabinet. Mm-hmm. But she's measuring it into there. So
Not to jump too far ahead, but Kirk, the on page 19, where we see this demon, like mostly all teeth. Was this an image that you pulled? We did a like scary moments or something. We did a top 10 or top 5 or something. Did you pick this character, or was it another character that was kind of just all teeth?
I think it's another character, because I was wondering the same thing. Gee, hasn't he done this sometime before, once before?
No, that was a later image that you guys are talking about.
I'm going to say, I think it's coming up in probably the next issue.
Is it? Is that when you go back in time?
There was
the Old West.
No, West. It was Avengers West Coast, when one of the hands from Master Pandemonium was one of the babies and grabbed a hold of somebody's head.
Oh, wonderful!
Isn't that what you guys were talking about before?
I thought it was an Alpha Flight. I thought it was.
Yeah, it is. It's coming later on. It's coming up.
Okay.
I do like that black and white pages.
That is, yeah. That's
yeah.
I like it that better than what they did in the Master Pandemonium in the Avengers West Coast. Regardless. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep.
What do you guys think of? Go ahead, Fred. Sorry.
I was going to say the black and white is a great use of just bleaching all the color out, and how creepy that you can get with just two colors. I think it was a great use of that technique.
It's ironic that you would say it that way, because the image on page 18, when you got the guy in the chair, and the third panel, just his face, the close-up on his face, it made me think of the Warren Publishing magazine, Creepy.
Yep.
And some of the stories that I'd read in there. Just, whew. Yeah.
Good stuff. So at
the end of this sequence, as they fight, is it your impression that the old man is just unconscious, or is he dead?
Something says that he's still alive, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, there. On the last page, the third panel, the blurb at the top says, even Lucas Stang is still alive, although very nearly catatonic.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have bet that he was going to be dead, but never mind.
What do you guys think of, we've had Elizabeth has been introduced, obviously, but this is her first, you know, her first foot mission. Steps into, missions into being, obviously, she's going to be a recurring character. She's got powers. As all the we don't know what yet, and we'll find out later. You know, Shaman basically says he thinks she's a mutant. He says her power is, it's almost on a level of a genetic mutation, meaning she didn't have to train. She's kind of, she's kind of possessing
intuitively,
the way a mutant would. Suddenly, her powers are just manifest. Which I don't know if they have. Because I didn't read past Burns when he left, so I don't know much more about her or if she's established that she is a mutant. Because
it's never established as that,
right? Because I don't think he wasn't Shaman when he had, or did he? He became Shaman after he was already buried and had a kid, right?
Right, because remember his wife had died, and
That's right.
he left Elizabeth with Heather's family,
so he could
and
go
he
train.
Went off on his walkabout kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And that's why Elizabeth is always angry with him.
Yeah,
yeah, and the images they have of her early in this book, she's always giving him the stink eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, justifiably so.
Yeah, yeah, I think
she said in an issue earlier that don't be mistaken, I'm not here because I'm your daughter. I'm here to talk to you as Shaman. And
right.
She's kind of drawn the line in the sand saying, I'm still real pissed at you, but I need your powers. I need your help.
Mm-hmm. Well, she Family kind of comes dynamic. To that, I think, at the end when she's like, is that it? It's over? You know, it's just, and he says, yeah, that's part of that. That's the gig. You know, we don't know what's going on. I think she started to finally kind of realize what her father, she's kind of softening, I think, a little bit to him, that she is understanding what his world really is, and she's not going to be as angry with him for, you know, he's basically, I do this because I have to do this. This is who I am.
I think it's funny that there's no explanation as far as what it is that Shaman pulls out of his pouch that defeats the monster. It just says a handful of baubles. And I'm like, well, what the heck is that?
Yeah, that's stuff for bedazzling.
It looks like pocket lint. It looks like he just threw pocket lint at the monster and poof, it disappeared.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lock washer. There's a lost key on a keychain. There's a candy wrapper.
It's a missing sock. It's one of my missing socks. I'm like...
Well, I like the fact that they don't explain it, that you don't know why this thing reacted to, it looks like jewelry or just bits and pieces or cobs, you know, cogs or something. It looks like a set of keys in there, something that, you know, there's something about it. It's like an elf reacting to, is it iron that they can't stand? Something like that.
Yep.
Some kind of mystical mumbo jumbo that causes them
it's the debris from the junk drawer in the kitchen.
Yeah. Hey, you never know.
But the artwork on the battle between Elizabeth and the monster above that is spectacular. I love the purple radiance coming off the two women fighting. Looks great.
I like the silhouette of the old man in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Nice. And again, a very effective use of a panel with just text in the middle of it. There's nothing on the panel.
Yeah.
Very effective use.
Linking out of existence.
It's a shame that big old house got trashed. I mean, we never see another exterior version of it, but it's obviously in ruins.
That whole neighborhood is going to smell like rotten eggs for weeks.
You're right.
Yeah. After page 15. Woof. No, but...
I mean, it's kind of like, what's that movie, Real Genius, where they did that with the popcorn?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
except different here they did it with eggs and just, oh. Boom. I really liked I can't say I was always a fan of Andy Yankus's coloring. And I'm not talking about staying within the lines because he's really good with that, but some of the choices that, you know, he's made in a lot of things. But in this one, I really did actually like his handling of the coloring, especially in those magically based scenes. Page 14, the coloring of whatever kind of spell or whatever it is that Shaman's doing, in contrast with the eggs, works really well.
Mm-hmm. But what color is it on the whatever you're looking at?
It's like a violet or with a, I mean, there's purple and pink.
Yeah, yeah, I'm gonna say it's like a pinky on.
It's like a magenta. Yeah. It's a
pink. It kind of reminds me of the colors they used on some of Phoenix's powers back in the X-Men during the Hellfire Club thing.
Yeah.
And then that nice shattering of it with the white on the bottom panel there.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Well, that's that kind of that. It's not Kirby Crackle, but it's that type, that that radiant energy that Kirby used to do, and Byrne does it masterly, of just lines emanating out.
Ooh.
We haven't talked about Snowbird. There's this little two-page interlude of her.
Okay, and, just one moment that she takes her time hopping up the hill as a bunny.
As a bunny.
To come talk to him when she could have been a snowy owl, some other form of Canadian bird or whatever. Goose. But no. She's a bunny.
Arctic rabbit.
That rabbit's murder.
Where's the ordinary rabbit? That's the most foul, cruel, and bad-tempered rodent you ever set eyes on. That rabbit's got a vicious streak a mile wide. It's a killer. Got huge, sharp... he can leap about. Look at the bones!
Yeah, this dog.
He's got a vicious streak.
Okay, I gotta go get the holy hand grenade. Hold on a second.
Look at the bones!
The holy hand grenade of Antioch.
Counteth thou to three. Proceedeth thou to five, but not without. No. Counteth thou to four.
No. Four must thou not count. Five is right out.
Brilliant sketch. Just wonderful.
So the fact that all five of us can quote it is even funnier.
Yeah. Now, is there two different sets of birds flocking by?
Yes, there's a group of Canadian geese flying by.
Well, I mean, at the top of page 10, as he's sitting there on his rock.
Yeah.
You see up in the top right, birds, and they're going to be heading in the direction of the point.
Like little spots.
I can barely see them. I can barely see them
I was thinking, where's the birds? What they're looking at? Yeah.
But then
it just looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the second panel, there's what has to be another group of birds.
Sure. Oh, it's migration season.
Against the cloud, again. Against the cloud. God, can't see them.
Hey, now you're looking at a actual physical copy.
Yeah,
because I'm looking at a digital, a Kindle version, and so all the everything's bright and
I'm looking at a scan. I'm like you, Nigel. I can barely see him.
Gosh, yeah.
Take a look at that real quick because I've got that also.
So they are there. They're in the upper right hand corner of panel one, and they're just to the right of his head in panel two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they are dots. They are just dots.
Yeah, that's so hard to see.
So
on them.
Tiny.
Yep. Okay. Well
Douglas kind of gives her a kind of a 1950s kiss here. He kind of just grabs her and does the, you know, I'm a man, you're a woman, you know, this is what we should be doing kind of thing. And of course she apparently does love him, but she's, and I don't remember. Mm. I don't know where their relationship goes. Does it end here? I can't remember.
No, it goes on for a little bit.
But if you're not reading the text, it looks like he had onions for lunch.
Yeah.
Oh, garlic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she's a smoker.
But she's thinking, you only love me because I look nice.
Yeah.
Take a look at this. Trying to test him, and reveals her true
nature. Which is nice the way he's Byrne's drawn. It's kind of like a Lovecraft. Like it's
a dark.
Her
elf.
Face is her face is too hideous for me to draw. You have to use your imagination as what she really looks like.
A dark elf. Yeah. It's funny because I thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like the Medusas in Star Trek, you know, they're too hideous to look. If you look at them, it'll drive you insane.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, that pretty much covers everything. Or did anybody else have anything else to?
No, it does a lot of setup. This kind of sets up the next couple issues.
Yeah.
I do have a question though. So Shaman's bag can pretty much pull anything out of it that he needs for any particular task, right?
As long as he can get it through the opening.
Well, yeah. Why can't he pull and out he something look. To fix the walls that got blown out on that mansion?
Who said he couldn't?
He doesn't seem too concerned about it.
Well, no, because he's worried about his daughter.
Okay. Well, he'll just what's the spell in Harry Potter? Reparo? Was it that Hermione does?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he pulls out that powder that transports them all across Canada. So what's to say there's not another powder that will rebuild the log cabin walls and zip everything back together?
Yeah. But is it have to be only in battle? Like, could he pull out a cup of coffee? Like he's just had a bad day and he needs a hot cup of coffee. Can you pull a cup of coffee out of that thing?
I think that would be abusing the magic.
Or a Snickers bar or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine a barista note on that cup?
You don't have to tip it.
But I can't remember, but like in the upcoming issues later on, maybe he does restore the house.
No.
No.
You're thinking of a different house, Nigel.
I can't remember, but
no. I was looking at the numbers.
Two to three issues.
They're to go back in time now.
Yeah.
In in issue 20, we get to the house you're thinking of, Nigel.
Oh no, yeah. No, I'm not. I know which one you mean. No, I'm not thinking of that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
No.
Now, you had talked earlier about the title being really, really long.
Yeah.
And you compared it to the Star Trek episode, Star Trek The World title. Is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky.
An amazing and that, title.
The thing is, I was watching rewatching a movie with Jim Carrey, The Truman Show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's the scene where he could utter that line and it would have been brilliant. But no, they didn't have him do that.
Mm.
If you haven't seen the movie,
royalties.
Well, if you haven't seen that movie, it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, I've never watched it.
Rewatch.
I've not seen it the whole way through, but I know what it's about. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, do we got anything else that we want to bring up on this one?
No, I think we're kind of. I think
I don't.
Kirk, I think, or somebody was. I think Nigel, you were talking about it with Fred when I came on, that we're kind of in the second half.
Alpha. Well, I was saying, I thought that issue 17 kind of marked the beginning of perhaps the second phase of Alpha Flight, but at the time I wasn't aware or I'd not realized what Kirk said later about. It uses those pages from X-Men 109 because it helped to fill the issue, which they only had 2 weeks to get ready. Mm-hmm. And I now he says that, I think, oh yeah, that's why they probably ran that particular recap of X-Men, because they were kind of hurriedly putting something together. But that's what it seemed like, the sort of beginning of a new phase.
With Heather talking about taking over leadership.
Yeah,
You know, and as we said, there's no real big battles in these two issues. It's more about character development and about growth and some changes. It is this interstitial section where, you know, we have to somehow bridge Mac's death with where it's going to go in the future.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, by the way, on the topic of Mac's death, these two issues, I think, is where I finally gave in and decided, okay, he must be dead. I know it's a few issues since now. It's another six issues on, but this is where I started to accept that Guardian had actually
exactly.
died
he's
in
not
issue
coming
12.
Back.
Yeah, it took me that long to accept it. Yeah,
hold that thought for another two issues.
Well, I know, but it wasn't him, was it?
And then hold it for about 50 issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah. Well, I was long gone by then. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this next issue is also we're introduced to, well, Elizabeth's character that she's going to be in her code name. So there, that mainly deals with that. And then there's stuff coming up with Walter.
Yeah, there's some,
and some other
some good stuff coming up.
Yeah, there's some interesting, some more stuff with who's the metal guy? Jeffrey
Madison.
Fox.
Madison. Oh. Madison. I was thinking of Jeffrey Madison.
Madison Jeffries.
When did Byrne stop working on Alpha Flight? Was that 28?
28. Yeah. 28.
Yeah. So there's some good stuff between here and there.
Oh, there is. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but we're literally 10 more episodes before he leaves. Mm. So
he didn't
put it this way: 10 more issues before he starts Alpha Flight elsewhere.
That I would like to read.
Yeah, we all would. Mm. Oh, well.
Well, they show up in X-Men elsewhere, so, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them did.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Shaman.
I just looked. I thought he maybe did the first annual, but no, that's Mantlo as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think Mantlo just had a birthday, didn't he? Did I see that on Facebook?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Just a few days ago. No comments lately on this health.
Well, I'll ask this. When we get to the end, and maybe this goes out to our audience, when we get to the end, do we want to cover the, does it tie in with Secret Wars 2? Do we want to cover that issue?
Oh,
or
is
yes,
we need to?
No, yeah. Just four pages. No. Just four pages.
Okay. Yeah. What I thought you were going to say is, when we get to the end of 28, although that's it for Byrne's artwork and that, the story is not over. I wondered if you're going to say, shall we just look at 29? Because
we could, yeah. Kind of like we did with Namor.
That
we
concludes
carried on.
The ongoing story of the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Mm. What we're faced with, though, we have a little bit of a problem here. Maybe it's not that big. But we started a two-part story, and we stopped halfway through it. And then the next, starting with 2021, has a two-part arc. So we're a little out of step in terms of stories. And I don't know if it's worth mentioning or trying to correct. What's your feeling, guys?
Well, I'm going to say we could either do just 19 on its own and then start another one with 2021, or mind you, now to be a bit of a long show, wouldn't it, to do 19 20 21?
Yeah, that would be a long. Perhaps we should have done that with this episode to do 17 18 19, but that's water under the bridge at this point.
I think we could just continue with the two. You can't cover whole story arcs at once, because you may either have one issue or you might have five issues, you know, if you're gonna.
Yeah.
Well, we'll work it out, lovely listener. Don't fret. Just stay here for each episode.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We'll cover them all.
We will. We will we will cover them top to bottom. If there's nothing else, then since Brian has not been on in a while. Brian, why don't you tell our lovely listeners how they can get a hold of us?
Oh, my gosh. You can write to us at Post Office Box. Oh, wait, we're not doing that. We've
also
moved into the
549.
Yeah. No, you can, of course, find us on Facebook. Our group is Third Degree Burn there. You can also write to us at gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGET. BYRNED at gmail.com. And of course, we're available on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes. And lastly, we are available on Discord. I don't see much discussion there yet on anything, but we're always available. If someone's going to start a discussion, we'll be there for it. I think that covers it.
Good. All right, Kirk, you want to take us out? Or who wants to take us out?
Oh, I think Brian should.
Okay.
Oh, really? I mean, I brought us
in. You got to make up lost time, Brian. You hadn't been here in a while.
Man, I tell you, you guys got put so much pressure on me. But, you know, do we have plans for what's next? I mean, we're just going to do Alpha Flight.
I think we'll. I think maybe we post it on Facebook. We could put it to our listeners and readers. You know, do they have a Christmas issue that maybe we have already covered and we ought to revisit it? Or maybe they have an idea of a Christmas issue or Christmas adjacent that they'd like us to cover. And then that we'll make them do the homework for us.
Yeah, because, I mean, the three that come to mind, of course, was there's the She-Hulk issue that we covered. There was the Silent Night,
which we've covered.
Story with the World War One. What was the guy's name? The Air Ace? And then there was the Santa Claus or Santa Doom. Did we cover Santa Doom?
I think we covered all three of them.
I've listened to that.
Well, for third degree burn, take us out. I'd like to say goodbye for Kirk Greenfield. Say goodbye, Kirk.
Good night.
Fred West.
Good night, everyone.
Nigel Spink.
Bye bye. Sayonara.
John Hyatt.
He's not here.
Ah. Tim Elliott.
Goodbye.
And I'm Brian Hughes. Y'all have a great week. Take care.
Now everybody's gone. Good day.
Good day.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world.